As I had mentioned in our adult service, we've been covering unfamiliar or minor characters in the Old Testament. And we only have maybe one more in our service, and maybe two. I can't recall at the moment. And then we're going to kind of change our emphasis shortly. But let me go ahead and give you an illustration before we start our message. Imagine that you decide to help someone without their knowledge. Just being a nice person, you decide to help them without someone being aware of it, to save them from harm, perhaps to save them from damage or from loss. For example, you're at home and you see your neighbor's dog running around outside your house on the street, and it's just kind of roaming around there. And so you know it's your neighbor's dog, and so you go ahead and you chase it down, and then you attempt to bring it to your neighbor and return the dog to your neighbor. Neighbor's not home, so what do? So you hold on to the dog, all right? And then you take it in, you give it water. If it needs to have some food, then you go ahead and give it some food. And you hope that your neighbor's going to return soon. And so day passes, and you go back, and neighbor's not there. Turns out that your neighbor is on vacation and away, and the dog somehow just got overlooked and, you know, not accounted for. So the dog is now in your possession. And as a good neighbor, as a good friend, you say, okay, I'll go ahead and take this dog in. I'll go ahead and feed it and care for it. I'll go ahead and bathe it. I'll play with it. I'll walk it, and I'll clean up after it. Which kind of makes me think, this is really sidetracked. In the city of Los Angeles, dog owners are required to pick up the poop from the dogs and to dispose of it in trash cans. And I often wonder, when the dog sees the owner do that, what does the dog think? Ha ha! <You know? laughs> Sorry, sidetracked there. Okay. So anyway, so you take care of this dog, and then your neighbor comes home, not even thinking about the dog, and you bring the dog back to your neighbor, and you say, hey, you know, your dog has been roaming around. I've been taking care of it, and I just want to return it back for you. And you kind of think, well, you know, you've been put out a little bit because you've had to buy dog food, and you've had to care for it, and so on and so forth there. And, you know, maybe in the back of your mind, maybe he'll give you some money back just as a nice gesture. So you train the dog, and the homeowner says to you, you know, I never asked you to do any of that. Maybe you should just mind your own business. And then just takes the dog, closes the door on you. And you go, what, right? I just went to all this effort being a nice guy to take care of this dog, and this is how my neighbor responds and treats me. Inside of you, you kind of, you know, some of you would be sad and disappointed. Others, you know, the blood is starting to boil, and you get a little upset, if not a lot upset. And you think, what's going to happen next? Well, this is a story that is similar to the one about David, Nabal, and Abigail. So Abigail is in the middle of this conflict between her husband, Nabal, and the future king, David. If you have your Bibles, please turn with me to 1 Samuel 25. And I'm going to apologize up front that we're not going to be able to cover all these passages, the entire passage this morning. So I'm going to give some summation comments just to move us along. Okay? So again, there's David, and there's Nabal, and there's Abigail. Abigail is Nabal's wife. Okay, in 1 Samuel 25, David, just a little bit of background information. David is still on the run from King Saul, and so he's roaming around in the wilderness, all right? He's formed this following of about 600 men, and they are kind of hanging out in the wilderness just outside of Nabal's hometown, okay? And Nabal is this businessman. He's really rich, and he's really well-known, too. So as I mentioned in our story, so the gesture of goodwill, what David does is that he guards the goat and the sheep of Nabal that are grazing in the wilderness, Okay, so Nabal owns thousands of goats and sheep, and they're grazing in the wilderness. And so David and his men take it upon themselves to guard the sheep, not only the sheep, from guarding them from wolves and other animals that may kind of take the sheep, but also guarding the shepherds that are there, because back then they had plenty of bandits that would come and to do harm to shepherds and then steal whatever they had. So these 600 men are guarding the sheep and the shepherd on behalf of Nabal. And there's some relationship to Nabal because of where all this is occurring. So there's kind of some kinship that's occurring that's here, okay? All right, so 1 Samuel 25, 2-4, and chapter 25 opens by telling us that it was on this occasion that it's a year, there's an occasion during the year in which the sheep are being sheared of its wool. I don't know if you've ever seen that on National Geographic or anything like that, but they bring in the sheep, they kind of hold on to it, and then they shave all the wool from the sheep. And it was a festive occasion. It's done probably about twice a year. And why it was such a festive occasion was because it allowed the owner to be able to count all the sheep that the owner had, and to keep track of it, to identify if they needed to. And then also, so that's one thing. So, you know, having had the shearing, he was able to count that he had about 1,000 goats and about 1,000 sheep. And that's what it says in the scriptures here. But then on top of that, it was a time for the wool to be shaved off, and then it would be sold for profit. And so it was a festive occasion because it's almost like, wow, our harvest or our harvest of wool has come in. Time to celebrate. So it was a really energetic time. It was a time of festival. It was a time to just kind of recognize all that a person had during these sheep shaving events there. So David, using my illustration earlier, David is this nice neighbor. And he's taking care of Nabal's pets. He goes out of his way to watch out for Nabal's property and his servants. And the situation is good, right? Everything seems to be fine at this point. David is kind to Nabal and his servants and takes care of his sheep. But David's been in the wilderness for some time now. He's being chased, and so all of his men are kind of roaming around. And certainly when you have no home or no base, you're going to have some resources that are in need. You need to be fed. You need to be clothed and so on and so forth. There's probably mainly being fed for all these people they had. And so given that he had guarded Nabal's goats and sheep, he thought that it was acceptable to ask Nabal if Nabal could provide any food or resources to feed his men. And that's a reasonable request, right? I mean, going back to the illustration, I took care of the dog, or you took care of the dog for a while, your neighbor comes home, you know, it wouldn't be harmful to ask, hey, can you kind of pay me back for my expenses? And so that's what David does. And this is where things take a nasty turn. So 1 Samuel 25:4-8. While David was in the wilderness, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men and said to them, here's on the side, go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time when your shepherds were with us. We did not mistreat them, and the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your servants, and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable toward my men, since we come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them. So David sends 10 messengers, and they do the following. First, he gives them, the messengers give Nabal a blessing. And there's a next slide. Do we have the next slide? Oh, sorry. Okay, not on there. Okay, so he does three things, and you can see that in the passage. He gives them a blessing. tells Nabal, secondly, tells Nabal that they were completely honorable during this time of watching over the sheep. And nothing was ever taken. There was no harm that came upon the shepherds or the sheep. And third, they're asking Nabal if they could have anything in return for their services. Some food or some money or something like that. So those three things were asked of Nabal from these messengers. Okay, seems pretty reasonable and seems pretty innocent. But this is Nabal's response to those messengers. Who is this fellow David? Nabal sneered to the young men. Who does this son of Jesse think he is? There are lots of servants these days who run away from their masters. Should I take my bread and my water and my meat that I've slaughtered for my shears and give it to a band of outlaws who come from who knows where? And you read that, and you hear that, and your response is, what? Right? And I know for me, I'm thinking, what a jerk. So I'm naming him Nabal the jerk. Let's see, there we go. All right. Nabal surely knew who David was. Even to be able to identify him as son of Jesse, he knew who he was. For anyone who was prominent as Nabal was in business, you had to know the political landscape. You had to know who was who, because those people in these positions, they could impact a person's business, right? So, and even some scholars think that Nabal had this allegiance with Saul, and so because of that, he gave David this difficult time, and he intentionally mistreated David in this way. But second, in the ancient Far East, there was this code of honor. If you did something right for a friend or for a neighbor, that friend or neighbor was supposed to reciprocate and do something nice for you. So there was this honor code. And so Nabal, we'll call it the bro code. No, Nabal had broken this bro code that existed. David did something nice, did something proper and honorable. And Nabal just kind of stuck it back in his face. And then lastly, when we think about it, here is this festive occasion. And Nabal is counting all his sheep and his goats, and he can say, wow, I have 1,000 goats, I have 3,000 sheep. But it's David and his men who's contributed to that, right? In order for Nabal to be able to celebrate all that he had, it's because David and his men allowed him to have that. They could have stepped back. They could have said, hey, this is none of our business. Go ahead and just leave the goats and the sheep alone. But they stepped in and they took care of this. And so now their help, their work, contributes to Nabal's success. So instead of recognizing David's contribution or acknowledging his help, Nabal insults him and spurs him. I'm sure we know people like Nabal, people who are rude, who are ungrateful, who are unkind. They could be families. Sad. They could be friends, sad, or they could be strangers. There are people who will do these uncourteous things, or they don't show any appreciation for your kindness or your gesture. You may even be like on the receiving end of Nabal, where you've done a good thing and people are just plain mean. And that's how it is. The message tonight isn't about don't be Nabal, but something to consider. And so this brings us to David, or as I like to call him, David the Hothead. Okay, David the Hothead. So David's 10 men returned to tell him exactly what Nabal said. Verse 13. David said to, and so they told him what Nabal said. It's kind of like, who are you, David, so on and so forth. And then David says to his men, after hearing this news, all of you put on your swords. So each man put on his sword, and David also put on his sword. For about 400 men followed David, while 200 stayed with the supplies. 400 men were putting on their swords, strapping on their gear, ready to go down to where Nabal was. And you can kind of sense what's going on and what's going to happen. David offended? Sure. Was Nabal offensive and a jerk? Yes. Did David have the right to be angry? Yes. He did. His intentions were good and they were disregarded and they were made fun of. It's like if anyone like us, if we made a good effort to do something on someone for someone else and they mock us, right? Or they make fun of us and they turn us into a joke and we're just embarrassed by it. Emotionally, we're just kind of affected by that. But David, he's not sad. He's not disappointed. He goes ballistic angry. Ballistic angry, where he's offended like this and he's ready to shed blood, and a lot of blood is that. So when I think about this, the word payback comes to mind, and the word overkill, literally overkill, comes to mind too. This is what David had intended. And so you may think that this is just a story and this is just kind of for dramatic effect. But this angry response happens in real life, in our daily lives, and I don't think we're immune to it or unaware of it. When we get offended, we want revenge. We want to be able to pay back in some way. When we're hurt in some way, or we've been kind of, injured in some way, I think there's a part of us that wants to get people back. Case in point, road rage, right? Road rage. You're driving along, and then someone just kind of cuts in front of you, intentionally, accidentally, who knows. But what is your reaction? Oh, what is this? And so you come around side, you speed up, and then you take a look at what type of person that is, right? If it's an old lady, someone senior, then you're going to back off and, you know, not be as angry and say, okay, understandable, you know, some of that. But if it's someone else, oh, you're ready to give some type of finger salute, right? And then you're going to come out, you're going to cut on back, you're going to get in front of them, then you kind of cut in front of them, and then, of course, you're going to slow down because you want to pay them back and let them know how it feels to be cut off, right? Sorry, I'm probably testifying a little bit too much here, so. but that happens. That happens, and things just kind of escalate. And so David here flies off the handle. God never gave him an instruction to go and seek this kind of justice or take this kind of revenge. It was purely ego-driven and emotional, and he wanted Nabal to suffer his wrath. But this is where Abigail enters the picture, and I'm going to call her. We can call her Abigail the Intercessor. A young person from Nabal's home informs Nabal's wife, Abigail, what Nabal told David's men and how he had insulted and dishonored David. It even appeared to this servant that doom was going to come upon them. When that servant said to Abigail, "We are in trouble because this is what Nabal said, and I know David, and we are in big trouble." 1 Samuel 25, verse 18 and 19. Then Abigail hurried and took 200 loaves of bread and 2 jugs of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 measures of roasted grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and loaded them on donkeys. She said to the young man, "Go on before me. Behold, I am coming after you." So Abigail reacts immediately, sends some servants and all these supplies ahead of her, and then she follows on a donkey to address the issue personally. It wasn't as if she was just going to send the stuff off and cross her fingers and hope that David would be okay. She was going to take the initiative to come and to address David and speak to the matter personally. But on her way towards David, David is coming towards her, and she meets David. And it's kind of funny, in this chapter here, David is still steaming mad. He's talking to himself like, "I'm going to get some vengeance today." So he's still really mad. And so she finally meets him, and she does the following from verse 23 to 28. She bows low and places her face on the ground. She takes the blame for Nabal's foolish response. She accepts the responsibility for not meeting David's messengers. She calls herself a servant to David, though she is the lady of the house. She pleads for forgiveness, and she pronounces a blessing upon David, testifying that he will be a king put in place by God. So she does all these things here. I'm sorry, the text is so small. I hope you're able to read it or see the highlighted portions there. But these are all the actions that she takes before David, hoping to quell the situation, hoping to calm the situation. Look at that. Bows her head low, takes the blame, accepts the responsibility. humbles herself and calls herself a servant to David, though she has her proper position in her house. She pleads for forgiveness, and she pronounces a blessing. So Abigail puts herself in the middle between David and Nabal, taking responsibility for his wrath and the consequences due upon Nabal. Verse 32, 34, because of Abigail's actions, David is calm and he relents on his avenging his dishonor. And he says, okay, I'm not going to do this. She says, today you kept me from participating in bloodshed and avenging myself by my own hand. Leave it to a wise woman to set things right between two dumb men, right? I can see some of the women nodding in here in agreement. Crisis is averted because Abigail's quick thinking and her stepping in. It's an act of intercession coming between Nabal and David. And it says three things to us. First one, peace may require your involvement. Peace may require your involvement. It's always easier and safe not to get involved in other people's disputes. But you personally may be the person with the calmer attitude and emotions. You're the one that may have who's able to think clearly and be able to assess the situation well and to give a more rational response. Abigail had this foolish husband, a conceited one. He may have been a tyrant. Abigail had the option to flee, to say, hey, this guy is on his own, and I'm just going to step away from this situation. Let God go ahead and take care of the situation, right? But she didn't. She stuck in there and got involved herself. It was her actions that caused David to change his mind and to not kill Nabal. Jesus says in the Beatitudes, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God, Matthew 5:9. When you and I step in as mediators, we reflect the nature of God, one of peace and reconciliation. The second thing that Abigail's intercession speaks to is peace may come at a cost. Peace may come at a cost. Abigail, though the cause of the conflict was not her fault at all, she had nothing to do with it, she takes responsibility upon herself. She takes the blame. She says, hey, you know what? It was my mistake. I didn't see that servant come. It's my fault. I'll take forgiveness. And she pleads for forgiveness. So restoration requires a cost. Restoration requires a cost. It could be absorbed by someone or by something. If a car gets damaged, for example, then someone has to pay the price for that car, right? Either the person who damaged it has to fix it and that person has to put out money to fix it, or as a car owner, I'm going to have to put out money to go ahead and fix it. Or if the car is not fixed, I just have to live with that. That's my expense I have to absorb. So whenever there's a harm, there's always some type of payment that needs to be done, or there's some cost to it. Someone has to pay in order for peace to be restored. So for conflict to be resolved, for peace to be accomplished, it may require some payment or some sacrifice from us. It may require some humility or some submission from us. That might be the answer in order for reconciliation or for peace to be restored and for it to occur. And then thirdly, our peace with God is due to Jesus' intercession. I don't know if after reading this, I know we went through it really quickly. I don't know if you've read, after reading this and seeing this, that you saw the gospel message in this. 1 Samuel 25 tells of this great wrath coming upon a foolish man. Yet an innocent person sacrifices herself to spare the life of an undeserving fool. Isn't that the good news of Jesus Christ? Isn't that the gospel message? Romans 5:18, consequently, just as one trespass resulted in condemnation for all people, so also one righteous act resulted in justification and life for all people. Through one person's righteous act, there's justification and life for all people. And we see that in Jesus Christ. Even as we were taking communion this morning, right, we recognize Jesus, who's brought peace between us and God, reconciliation between God and us. God's judgment for sin was coming upon us, and we deserved it, but Jesus came in obedience to be the atoning sacrifice. He stepped in and bore our sins so that we might have life. Our peace with God came because Jesus got involved. He paid the price with his own life. And so we have life. We have peace with God because of Jesus' intercession. Let's pray together.